Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, there's a new star on the North Carolina literary scene. His book came out just really a few days ago, and everybody's talking about it. The author's name is Jason Mott. He lives down in Columbus County. The name of his book is The Returned, and he's agreed to talk to us in Chapel Hill about his book. Jason, you're still in the middle of a whirlwind of activity, I think, related to the release of your book. How's life for you?
Life is very busy right now. It's a lot of fun. I'm on the road a lot, doing a lot of travel, meeting new people, meeting people now that have read the book. So it's definitely a whirlwind right now, but it's a lot of fun.
Well, you're traveling all over. I know you're traveling around in North Carolina. You were in Chapel Hill a few days ago, and so where else are you traveling to?
In North Carolina, Chapel Hill, Wilmington, Winston-Salem, and I think Southern Pines as well. So Southern Pines just outside of Fayetteville. So those are the main North Carolina stops. I think there may be a few others coming up pretty soon, but right now those are the main North Carolina stops we're doing for now.
Well, you grew up in North Carolina, so you're familiar with these places, even if you haven't spent a lot of time in them. But is it different when you're visiting as a famous author now?
Well, it is, and at the same time, it isn't. Because I've grown up here, so I know these places. I got friends in almost all of these towns. So when I go in that aspect, it's kind of the same familiar feeling. You know, I get to visit with friends and catch up on old times. But at the same time, it is different doing readings in those towns and meeting booksellers and people that have read the book. So it does become a little bit different there, but it's a lot of fun. The Carolina crowds are always very supportive, probably more so than any other of the crowds. And so it really has everywhere I go, it has a, feels like I'm in hometown, has a home field advantage, so to speak, and it's really a lot of fun.
Will you tell us a little bit about your book for those who haven't had a chance to read it yet or who are just hearing about it for the first time?
Yeah, definitely. The title of it is The Returned. And it centers around this global event in which people's loved ones who have passed away have suddenly begun returning. It centers around this couple, Harold and Lucille, who are in their 70s, and 50 years ago, their 8-year-old son drowned on his birthday. So this couple goes to the door one day, now in their 70s, and there's their son, still 8 years old, just as he was on the day he passed away. So that's basically the premise of it. It happens to a lot of different people around the globe. And everyone is really just trying to understand it, trying to react to it, trying to really figure out what it all means for them personally.
Well, that would be, I mean, that's a surprising event. It's in fact an unbelievable event for many of us. How do you, what do you say to people who say, look, I can't accept that premise. I can't go forward with it.
Well, a lot of it is the idea of, it's a magical realism novel. And what that basically comes down to is, you want to take something that is outside the norm. Obviously, you know, it is a bit of a fantastic premise. But once you take that premise and really try to actually treat it as if it was a real-world event, you're able to discover certain things and maybe think about things in a slightly different way. And that's really what I wanted to do with the book, to kind of give some backstory on how this all started. And maybe that'll help people really understand what I was trying to go for with the book. Both of my parents had passed away. And when I was about in 2010... I had this dream that I came home from work and found my mother sitting at the kitchen table waiting for me.
This is your mother who's passed away.
And, yes, exactly.
And so it's there in your dream, there she is.
Exactly. In my dream, there she is sitting at the table just waiting for me to come in. And so I came in and sat down with her, and she and I just sat and talked for what felt like hours. We talked about all these things in my life that had happened since she passed away, new people that I met, new friends, me going to college, wanting to become a writer. She gave me a hard time about not being married, because that's what your mom does. And so it was just a really warm, kind of beautiful dream where for the first time in years, I felt like I was really with my mother again. And I woke up from that dream, and I really expected to find her sitting in the living room waiting for me. That's really how vivid it was. And it stayed with me for weeks, and I could not get out of my head. And I told a friend about it, and he said, wow, wouldn't it be amazing if that actually happened, and what if it wasn't just her? And so that's really what the book tries to capture. It tries to create this world, this moment in time when all those barriers that happen, you know, when people pass away, we lose them. Well, here's a brief moment in which we haven't lost these people, and they've kind of come back to us. and it has a lot of big ramifications for those people. So I know the premise is a bit unusual. It's not your standard kind of story, but the hope is that by making it not quite the standard story, it's able to achieve something a little bit different that readers will really enjoy.
It's what, I mean, it's not exactly science fiction. What do we call it? Speculative fiction? Is that the right?
Yeah, speculative fiction, literary fiction, whichever one you would like to kind of fit it into. I think it would go into any of those categories.
I started thinking about it, and I'm kind of a literalist. You know, it's hard. You know, I'm a Doubting Thomas kind of guy about everything. And so I'm a hard person to persuade to accept an unbelievable premise. And then I started thinking, well, you read Gulliver's Travels, didn't
right,
you? And
exactly.
Didn't you enjoy that, even though you knew that there weren't in, you know, these races of little men? But you, once you kind of are Peter Pan, you know, there are a whole bunch of examples of literature where I've been persuaded easily to suspend disbelief for a moment.
Yeah, I think that good literature has that. That's part of the benefit of fiction, where when you're able to kind of break that barrier and suspend that disbelief and take the story to places it wouldn't be able to literally go, I think that presents a lot of great opportunities from a writing aspect and from a reading aspect. If you're a reader and you kind of come across it, it does really reward you a lot to be able to expand out of your normal circle and see things from a slightly different perspective. So I think that's one of the benefits of fiction in general, whether it be speculative or science fiction or whatever type it is. It really is healthy, I think, to kind of see outside perspectives and to try to go down new routes.
One of the things that that you did that helped me suspend disbelief was that you made the two parents, each of them in a different ways, very skeptical about this event of people returning from the dead. They also had a difficult time, each in their own way, of accommodating this. And I thought this was a tremendous achievement on your part. How did you approach the idea of having the parents who, you know, their son's coming back, they should be very happy about it, but they... Mm-hmm. They're skeptical about these returning people.
Well, I wanted to, even with the premise being as fantastic and unusual as it is, I wanted it to be grounded in the real world. I wanted people to react as they would if this was something that really and truly happened. And so playing along those lines, you would have people who were immediately accepting because they wanted to be reunited with these certain individuals, and then you would have people who were not as accepting because, you know, you've buried loved ones. You don't believe in the ability of these things to happen, these things to exist. So there would be friction there. And with Harold and Lucille, there was a lot of opportunity to play out in their own little home and in their own marriage, both of those opinions, both of those dynamics of those who believe that we're being given a second chance and those who believe that these people are not our loved ones. And it just kind of, it fed itself into a really good opportunity to build friction and see these two characters react with each other. Because they've been married for 50 years now. They know each other very well. So to have them two on opposite ends of the spectrum, it just kind of gave a lot of good opportunities for writing.
Well, you mentioned about your own parents and about how the appearance of your mother in one of your, a vivid appearance of your mother in your own dream had sort of set this project in motion. And we talk about Harold and Lucille, who would be about the age of your parents, I guess. But tell us about your parents and about your growing up.
Sure. I'm born and raised in a town called Bolton, which is about a half hour west of Wilmington. It's a very small town, maybe 700-800 people somewhere in that neighborhood. Got like one little caution light. Had a stoplight one time. They took that out. Very, very small town, but I still live on a dirt road to this day, and it's one of those towns where everyone knows everyone very well. My family has lived on that particular spot of land for generations. I got uncles on the left and aunt on the right, and it's one of those towns where the roots run very deep. And for the project, I wanted to mirror that. The town is called Arcadia, which is actually named after a town in Bladen County called East Arcadia, which is where my mother was born and raised. So there are a lot of things of that manner where I wanted a small town to be the focus of the project and, you know, pattern after my own small town, because I so loved growing up in small towns and living in small towns that I wanted to kind of bring that into the project. it was just a really good childhood living in small towns. Even to this day, I'm not a fan of big cities. It's just something I don't think I'll ever be. I think I'll always be a country boy. So it felt good to kind of work with that.
Well, what were your, you say your parents and their families had been there, or your dad's families had been there for a long time. Was it farming? Or what was the economic base?
My father actually worked at a paper mill in Riggerwood. He worked at International Paper down in Riggerwood, North Carolina. My mother was a housewife. My grandfather and my great-grandfather were both farmers. So it was definitely a farming background. And then, you know, once my father and his brothers kind of came about, they shirked farming to a certain degree and went to the military, got production jobs, things of that manner. But it's definitely a root of farming there. My uncle still raises cows. I have a cow pasture right next to my house, things of that manner.
Well, so there was not wealthy, but you had a base on, you know, your family owned the land and could raise food on it. And I guess, you know, you couldn't join the country club or anything, but you were not poverty stricken.
It was a bit of a hard scrabble life. I will definitely say that. My father was the only source of income growing up, and there was me and my mother, of course, my two sisters. And so there were a lot of tight days. Ends were very stretched to meet some days. But we made it as a family. You know, we loved each other very deeply. My father worked very hard all of his life, and we made it, kind of all teamed up together and kind of made it out. So, yeah, it was definitely some hard scrabble years at times, but sometimes you build a lot of good families that way.
Well, I tell you, your father was working labor. I mean, he was a laborer at the paper mill. So no college for him, I'm guessing. Were you first generation college?
Pretty much. Family? I've got a sister who's a few years older, about 6 years older than me. She went to college first, obviously. Then I followed footsteps. So we're in that first generation of college educated that came after my father. He went to high school. That was the most he kind of achieved. So, yeah, we are in that first generation of college.
Well, what was it about your family that kind of opened the door for you to move on beyond high school? And in some families you hear parents didn't go to college, but they were determined that your children were going to go. In other cases, it was just an environment that left it the way open to succeed in high school and then go on to college. How was it in your family?
In my family, it was my father and mother. They didn't necessarily try to shove me into college. It was something they always wanted me to do, but they didn't really try to force me into it. Their philosophy was, as long as you were able to, you know, provide for your family, if you wanted to start a family, as long as you were able to take care of yourself and, you know, didn't get in any trouble, whatever you did, it was fine. So if you went to the military, that was wonderful. If you got a job as a laborer or whatever it was, that was wonderful. As long as you were responsible and try to live a good life and take care of yourself, my parents they didn't really care how you did it. And later on, you know, they were always supportive of my writing. And it wasn't until my mother passed that I realized that I wanted to go to school for writing and really focus on it and really pursue it through the college route. And my father was a huge supporter of that. Him and I had a long discussion about it before I made the final decision, and he was behind me 100%. He helped me kind of financially, kind of helped make some ends meet on some of those tight days. And he was just really supportive and said, you know, if that's what you want to do, I'm completely behind you, go do it. And he was really, really strong about that.
Well, you know, even though you've been out of college, been out of undergraduate college for a few years, but still college has gotten pretty expensive. And so was it a financial struggle for you to go to college to pay the tuition, you know, living expenses?
Yeah, definitely. Like I worked a job the entire time. I had to do student loans and grants and things of that manner, a few scholarships here and there. So it was definitely hard to kind of get those ends to meet. I had to kind of, you know, do a little this, a little that, whatever I could to kind of help finance my way through it. I even graduate school, which is typically a three-year program, I actually got through it. I kind of rushed through it in 2 years with the idea of that even saving a little bit of money on the back end, just kind of going through it a little bit quicker. So it was, finances were always an issue to kind of deal with. I think that is the majority of people in college right now. College is very expensive, obviously, and the majority of people that are trying to make it are just trying to kind of get through it as best they can, and I was definitely one of those.
You know, I was starting this conversation about your parents, basically to lead up to asking whether or not your parents were sort of the model for Harold and Lucille, the sort of the lead characters in your book.
They were patterned after, my parents fed into Harold and Lucille to a certain degree, but they were also the parents of a few friends that that have kind of come into my life since my mother's passing. I had this really wonderful, a good fortune of when my mother passed, and especially after my father passed, I had a really strong network of friends that formed, most of whom I met in college. And over the years, their parents have in very many ways adopted me. I go over there for holiday dinners. They came to all my readings when I was reading poetry, and you know, very few people came out. They would come and support me and take me to dinner afterwards, and you know, they filled in some of those gaps that were created by the passing of my parents. And so I wanted to kind of pay homage to them by having them be, you know, characters or you know, patterns for the characters that I built later on. So Harold and Lucille are the amalgamation of a lot of different people in my life who are all very supportive and very important to me, who I wanted to really bring in and really lean on for those characters.
We're visiting with Jason Mott, who is the author of a brand new book, The Returned. He and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Jason Mott. Jason's debut novel, The Returned, has gotten quite a bit of attention. I understand it because I've read it as a great story angle and a very provocative story angle. But Jason, before we finish up, and I'm a little bit worried about it, one of the exciting things about your book is that it was optioned by ABC for a television series. And a lot of authors have their work optioned by movies, by the movie industry or by the television industry, and then nothing comes of it. Yours is a different story, isn't it?
It is a bit of a different story, and I'm still trying to figure out exactly how it all happened. When we sent out the manuscript to different publishers trying to find a publisher, my agent, who was absolutely wonderful, also sent it to a film rights agent that she works with. And he basically said, well, you know, we'll see what happens. And so maybe a month and a half after we had made the book deal, I got an email from him saying, hey, there are a few networks and a film studio interested in the manuscript. And so I was completely floored. I had not expected that at all. So we spent weeks kind of picking out who we wanted to go with, and we decided to go with Plan B.
Now, whoa! I'm just so sorry. And for folks who are listening in, I apologize for interrupting Jason in the middle of this.
Sure.
But not only made a deal with the television, but you had a choice of. I mean, there were several people lined up interested in this. Is that right? I mean, did it turn into an auction?
Well, I don't know what happened on the back end of that. I just know that there were a few people that we had phone calls with. A few different networks and things of that matter who were interested in it. I did have the good fortune of having more than just one person interested, which is always wonderful. And it eventually came down to Plan B, which is actually owned by Brad Pitt. And I have not met Brad Pitt, which is what I always
all the girls want to know if you've met. They want to know if you can introduce him to Brad Pitt.
Exactly.
So you say, well, what about me? No, that's good. Okay, so Brad Pitt is the business partner behind
yes he
this.
Owns he owns the film production the production company Plan B, and so they were just really during the process of speaking about the project, they were really passionate about it. I like what they had to say about their vision for it, and so we decided to go with them. So that was the actual optioning, and as you kind of said yourself, options oftentimes will go nowhere. They'll just kind of sit on a shelf for years, and then they revert back to the author at some point, but oftentimes nothing happens, or if it does happen, it takes years. For example, Brad Pitt's movie that came out this summer, World War Z, that was actually optioned 8 years ago. So it took 8 years from the option to actually seeing something on screen. So I kind of expected that, you know, if I got really lucky, maybe a decade from now, I'd be able to see something happen from it. So that was like July of last year. And then all of a sudden, in September, I got an email saying, hey, they found a writer. Then in October, it was, hey, they found a director. And then a month later, it was like, hey, they're casting. So things just really happened really quickly. They shot a pilot for it in March of this year. It went before the network executives in May, which is when pitch season happens, and the exec chose it. He said he actually loved it. So I'm still kind of baffled, still trying to understand how this all happened. I wish I could say I planned it all, but I had no clue at all how anything happened.
Well, what does the television, upcoming television series, do for you now?
What do you mean exactly?
Well, I'm seeing, you know, I'm kind of excited about a television series that I can't even see because it's associated with the book of a North Carolina author. But I wonder, I guess I ought to also say that I think that the concurrence, even of a TV series to come, that the talk and the generation of talk helps bring attention to you and to your book. And I mean, that's sort of my guess. And is that happening? Are people interested?
Yeah, I think that definitely gives it a little bit of an edge. Being a debut author is an extremely difficult prospect in and of itself, because there are so many authors trying to get noticed, so many debut authors. And when you're a new author, no one knows your track record. Readers have no idea who you are, so they're very reluctant to spend their hard-earned money on a book by you when they have no clue who you are, why they should be interested in something that you've written. And so when you have, you know, if you can say that, you know, there's a television series being optioned, and, you know, I hate to say it, but Brad Pitt's name being attached to it does help. I would readily admit that. At least, you know, it doesn't guarantee you success by any means whatsoever, but it does kind of catch people's attention just enough to maybe notice your book. You know, if there's two books sitting there and you've got one with all the television stuff kind of behind it, there's, you know, people are more likely to kind of look at that just a second longer, and maybe that 1 second longer is what makes the difference. Now, at the end of the day, it comes down to what the book, you know, the book itself. You know, you have to have a solid book, hopefully, to people actually enjoy reading. And thankfully, so far, the reviews have been pretty good all across the board, and people are reading the book and responding. I'm getting emails from readers now who really loved it, so it's... The book is kind of doing its own thing, but in those early stages, which is technically we're still kind of in early stages, it does help. Like, I will definitely admit that having that kind of support from you know, the fact that a production company believed in it enough to option it, that does help you a little bit.
Well, one of the things that I've had fun with is seeing the opening scene sort of from this television series. You know, I had my own mental picture of this based on your description of what happened when the federal agent brought this 8-year-old boy, or something that looked like this 8-year-old boy who died 50 years ago, and came in and having his parents react to it. And then now I can go to the web and see, you know, a 2 or 3 minute visual representation of this scene as it's been adapted by the guy who wrote the TV script. Well, that, you know, that's fun. It's fun for me. Now, what about for you? When you see somebody who's not followed exactly the way you wrote it, it's a little bit different, but how do you feel when you see that? Do you get excited or you get mad?
No, I'm totally excited by it, actually. I'm not looking for the television series to be a carbon copy of the book. Quite frankly, I think that would be a disservice both to the book and to the people that are working on the television series if they try to just copy it. The whole point of, you know, television or movies or whatever it is to reinterpret. It's a different medium. You have to change the rules. And I like the fact that you're going to have a story that's going to be different from the book. I think that you can really do that and explore things. There are things that I overlooked, you know, avenues maybe I didn't see during the writing of the book that these writers now are able to see and say, wow, what about this and what about that? And so they're able to explore new avenues, and hopefully if the show gets picked up, it keeps running for seasons after seasons, there'll be different things they can pick up in this world and really explore, and I can sit and watch it just like everyone else and ride along and see where this journey is going and kind of enjoy the ride. So it's something that I don't have any qualms about letting them go their own way with it. I'm not trying to look over their shoulder at all or tell them what to do. I encourage them to kind of make it their own project and really go their own route with it and see what they can do with it.
I guess the most famous actor is Omar Epps, who plays this federal agent who brings the boy back to his parents and then has a role in it. Are there other actors and actresses that we should be familiar with or that you've gotten to know and like?
Sure, definitely. Omar Epps, obviously, is, I think, the one that a lot of people know right now. There was also Kurtwood Smith, who starred in That 70s Show, which ran for so many years. He was a dad. He was Red, the dad on that show, which a lot of people watched and loved. There's also Frances Fisher. She was in Unforgiven. She was in Titanic. She did a lot of really, really great parts. There's Matt Craven. He was in Crimson Tide a while back and a few other movies. So they're getting a really good cast together. They've got a great new actor named Landon Jimenez, who's playing the part of Jacob, the young boy.
This really is the eight-year-old.
Eight-year-old. Really great job casting. So when they, and that's another reason why I'm really supportive of the show. When they were doing the process of, doing the casting, all of their casting choices were pretty spot on. Like, I was really excited by the choices they made, and that just built my confidence even more in their ability to really make it into something special and unique. That hopefully, if people have read the book, because hopefully they read the book first, and when you go and watch the show, you'll get a slightly different variation. It'll be something different and rich and enjoyable just as much as the book was.
Well, the one of the confusing things about the upcoming TV series, your book is called The Returned, and the TV series has adopted another title called Resurrection. And is that, I mean, it seems to me there's a opening for a little bit of confusion, and I wonder how you see that.
I'm okay with that, actually. I mean, titles are not etched in stone, so if they chose, for whatever reason, to retitle it, I don't have any problems with that at all. It was a decision that was made from, like, the network exec, so for whatever reason, they chose to retitle it, which I'm totally okay with. I mean, the project itself started with an entirely different title. We went through maybe three or four different titles just before we got to The Returned. So titles are very fluid for me by nature. You kind of understand very early on that titles are not etched in stone, especially for this type of project. So if the TV marketing people or whoever it is that was behind the decision said that they felt Resurrection would be a better title for it for television, I'm okay with that.
So what you... I'm trying to design in my own mind the book cover that will be used. I love the book cover, by the way, that you're using or that your publishers are using right now. But I've often seen when the movie comes out on books that have been popular, to make them even more popular, the book covers are revised to show the pictures of the TV stars or the movie stars or to do something that relates. Like on, I don't know whether you remember on Cold Mountain, when the movie
right.
Cold Mountain was made, there was a whole new publishing cycle for Cold Mountain, and it featured the actors and actresses in
right,
that movie.
Exactly.
So when, and but it was all Cold Mountain. So now on the book cover for The Returned, after Resurrection comes on, it'll have to be The Returned, sort of big print, but it'll be as seen in The Resurrection, or the story of the or something. They'll have to, it'll be a project. And have you been, I mean, you got other things to think about, haven't you?
Yeah, exactly. those are decisions that are made by the publisher, so they'll kind of make the call on that. I'll probably see it, and you know, I'll have feedback into it, but as far as the actual designing of it, there are people who do that professionally, so I don't want to step on their toes. I totally trust them to come up with a really great cover, however they decide to do the cover once the show comes out. So I'm totally okay with that part as well. Like I said, the people that are in charge of that, the people that do the graphic design, layout design, and cover design, are amazingly talented people. So I have full faith in them.
We're visiting with Jason Mott. We're talking about his book, The Returned. We've been talking about the television series that's based on the book. But when we come back after this short break, we'll talk some more about the book and try to persuade Jason Mott to tell us a little bit more about it. He and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Jason Mott is my guest. We're getting to know him pretty quickly because his debut novel, The Returned, is getting great reviews and is selling books and has already garnered a television series based on the book that we'll be able to see in March of next year. Jason, you told us, I know you're protective of the story, but I've heard you talk, tell people a little bit more about the story than you told me, which is today, which is essentially that you had this couple and their son, who drowned 50 years ago, reappears just like he was on the day he drowned as an 8-year-old. But that's the startling opening, and we start to believe that. What else is happening in the world around this couple and their returned son?
Sure. Like the as the story progresses, as I mentioned, it's an event that's happening on a large scale, so it's kind of happening all across the world. So as the story moves forward, there are more and more of these returned people that are showing up. And so that actually begins to cause a certain amount of friction, a certain amount of conflict, because there are certain people who want to have their loved ones back, and there are certain people who do not want to have their loved ones back. And so if someone is, you know, not wanted, the government has to find something to do with them. And so as things progress, they initially began kind of, you know, putting people in kind of like camps or just, you know, little holding facilities until they can figure out what to do later. That was the thinking behind it. You know, we'll kind of just hold people here until we figure out what to do later. But as things progress and more of the return begins showing up, those little holding centers start to get overcrowded and things just begin to go slightly awry and more awry as the story moves forward. It's a case where resources begin to run out, things become very limited. It really starts to become a slightly unsettling, unnerving event as these people whose status as, you know, living individuals is even brought into question, because there are entire groups of people who do not believe them to be genuine people are responding to that and lashing out in ways that only ways they can know how, which oftentimes is violence. And all of it kind of gets shown through the lens of this small town of Arcadia, because I think that small towns, when something like this would happen, small towns would feel it the hardest once it began to affect them. Big cities, you know, they're kind of used to things being unusual sometimes, because you get unique events happening in big cities. In small towns, things rarely happen. So for them to have this influx of people coming in and all these events happening, it really would shake them to the core, which is what I want to do with these characters and do with this story.
Wow. Well, as you're traveling around talking about your book, what are your readers, people who've already read your book, what are they telling you about it that might have surprised you? I mean, have there been any surprises in terms of the questions that you've gotten, or what people see in your book that you maybe didn't totally intend to put there?
Well, there's a lot of people that it's interesting to see how the idea of these camps, because as I mentioned, as the story goes on, they return to kind of put into these camps. Those are being viewed very differently by different people. I don't want to give too much away because that was, I think, spoil it for people coming into it cold and trying to make their own decisions about it. But there are certain parallels between, you know, just former things like the concentration camps. Some people have said the Japanese internment camps that were set up in the U.S. during World War II. There are all these historic events that people are seeing mirrored in those sections and finding their own narrative, their own story in those elements as well. The greatest thing that I've been seeing from readers who have found the book, and this is something that's really fulfilling to me and honestly the reason I wrote the book, is people are finishing the book and finding that they're spending more time thinking about people that they have lost and remembering them fondly and wanting to spend time with people that are here. So it seems to be a book that's really inviting people to live, to not focus on the bad things that have happened, and to really cherish the time that they have with people who are here now, and to take time out sometimes to reflect on people who were here, which is honestly the whole goal of the book. If I feel like if I can get that achieved with any one individual, the book was a success. And it seems as if that's the thread that people are kind of responding to, and those are the emails I'm beginning to see, and it's really humbling and really fulfilling to see that happen.
We're visiting with Jason Mott, who's the author of a new book, The Returned. He and I will be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Jason Mott, who's a North Carolinian, lives in Columbus County. He's the author of the debut novel, The Returned. It's gotten quite a bit of attention, both critically. The sales are doing good, and it's already not just optioned for a TV series. It's set for a TV series. I think, Jason, I believe the date's March 9th on ABC. If I've got it close to being right, it's in any event, it's early next year.
Right.
You know, one of the things that intrigued me about your book is, and you live and grew up in Columbus County, which historically has been a county in which, you know, the Klan was active in in the 1950s and then in later years as well. Your novel is set in Columbus County, and although you every now and then you identify someone by race, basically it's just sort of it's not race that's the racial differences. You can hardly find them in your book.
Right.
Is that the way it really is in Columbus County, or is this just your literary fiction?
Well, I think that in certain cases, it can be kind of what you go looking for, which is not to say there's no racism, which is not to say there's all racism in Columbus County. I think that the truth always lies somewhere in the middle. For me, The Return was never a book about race, and so there was no need to forcibly throw it into the context of the novel, because Columbus County is not a county defined by race or race issues or race inequalities or anything of that matter. I think that if you take a location and reduce it down to simply its problems, you're really doing a disservice to the people that live there and the people who have lives there and the people who have made communities there. So it never became a novel just about race. It's a novel about people and connections, and that's really what I want to focus on.
Well, I think it's an amazing tribute to your neighbors and to you that you've done that so well. Those of us who've read The Return are anxious to know, after you finish this Whirlwind book tour, whether or not you're going to be able to have another dream or have some other inspiration that will enable you to bring a similar book to us anytime soon.
Well, I definitely stay working, and as a writer, you never wait for inspiration. You always write. I mean, this is maybe my fifth actual manuscript, the first one to get, you know, published, but I've always written manuscripts, so I've always got projects going on. This is just the one that got noticed first. So, yes, writing is, you know, very little about inspiration and more about perspiration. So you sit down at the desk, and the ideas will eventually come.
Well, you know, it puts you – another thing, I don't want to do anything other than to go along with that and encourage you. But there is often a struggle for someone who writes a very successful first novel, as we think you have done, to fulfill the expectations with the second one. So give us a hint about what might be your best guess about what your second published novel might be about.
Sure. The next manuscript, which I'm kind of pretty far along in right now, is another speculative fiction project. Takes place in another small town in the South. So there are certain elements that are going to be that are similar. I honestly think it reverberates pretty well with The Return. I think people who have read The Return will come to the next manuscript and have a familiar feeling, even though it's quite a different story. I think they will find certain things there that speak to. I think the two books speak to one another in a certain way. I think their readers will find that and kind of gravitate towards that and kind of tie the two books together in their mind. And I think that would be something really cool for readers to have happen. But yeah, production is definitely going ahead on that one. And I think it'll be something people like.
Well, now, will you bring over any of the characters of The Return into the new book?
No characters will be carrying over. There will be references, I think, from time to time to Arcadia and to surrounding areas. In the same way that Faulkner kind of built that fictional county where his stories take place in, I would like to build a fictional version of the state where these stories kind of talk to one another across pages, but no direct relation of characters or anything of that matter.
So the geography will be sort of the same. I mean, we'll have...
Well, it'll be North Carolina. Like, the, you know, Arcadia takes place in a region similar to coastal North Carolina, you know, Columbus County, Bladen County, places like that. The new project is more akin to Asheville. It's more in the mountain side of North Carolina, but both are North Carolina stories.
So you're I like that because that gives you the opportunity to do some research up in Asheville, which is a pleasant place to do research.
Exactly, that was the whole plan, actually.
Well, Jason Mott, I tell you, I share the excitement, and thank you for being so generous in sharing your time to let us share the excitement of your new novel and all of the great things that are accompanying it. We wish you well, and we look forward to talking with you sometime soon about a new book set more in Asheville than in Columbus County. In the meantime, those of you who have not had a chance to take a look at The Return and its setting in Columbus County, don't miss it.
All right. Well, thank you very much for having me.
Thanks to Jason Mott. Thanks to all of y'all for listening. This is D.G. Martin, who's talking, and I'll be back here before you know it.